Radio Féministe Carcérale, chaque lundi à 19h.
Feminist Prison Radio, at 7 p.m. on Monday.
La Radio Feminista Prisionera, todos los lunes a las 7 p.m.
Radio Nasabil Nasrinat, Kilion Panel, Sahasabal Nasa.
Complitza, rompiendo los muros de insolación.
Arratsaldeon, guten Abend, ihr hört Komplitza. Heute feministische Sendung auf Radio Alora 97,5 MHz. Ihr hört im Hintergrund eine baskische Musik, Schilduak, und das bedeutet Las Silenciadas, los Silenciados, las Silenciades, die das zu schweigen gebracht werden, die im Gefängnis. Deswegen für euch. Wir waren auf die Straße am 1. Mai, 3. Mai, 4. Mai und haben die Stimmen von der Straße gebracht und ihr wart auch mit uns. Ich hoffe, wir haben die Isolationmauer gebracht und ein Lied für euch und danach eine Veranstaltung, weil heute eure Komplizen eine Pause machen. Denak aski zanarte, ikai xilduak, itzetara ekartzeko.
Gestern, also am 5. Mai, fand in Bern im Kapitel eine Veranstaltung statt mit dem Titel «Gegen Willkür, Isolation und Folter». Es ging dabei um den Kampf für die Rechte von palästinensischen Gefangenen in israelischer Haft. Die Veranstaltung wurde organisiert von Medico International Schweiz zusammen mit Baba News und dem Cine Résistance in Bern. Wir waren vor Ort und haben die Veranstaltung aufgenommen. Gesprochen hat an der Veranstaltung Haya Abu Warda. Sie arbeitet bei Physicians for Human Rights, welches ein Prisoners and Detainees Programm haben und sich einsetzen für die Rechte von palästinensischen Gefangenen. Und Haya Abu Warda erklärt gleich selber, was PHRI ist, was ihre Projekte sind. Und ja, die Veranstaltung ist auf Englisch.
I work at PHRI, Physicians for Human Rights Israel. PHR is a human rights organization established in 1988 during the first Intifada, the Palestinian uprising. It was established by Palestinian and Israeli physicians who believed that there should be an organized movement or action to protect and ensure the right to health to all people living under Israeli control. So it started mainly as a mobile clinic of volunteer physicians who would go to Palestinian villages in the West Bank who lack access to proper healthcare and provide primary health, and then after that provide referrals for examinations and treatment in Israeli hospitals. After that we also started sending these delegations to Gaza once a month. Obviously, it stopped since the beginning of the war with the closure of all the borders of Gaza. But the same idea applied there of sending a delegation of 3 to 4 days, where minibus full of surgeons, physicians, physiotherapists would go and would provide primary treatment and surgeries, and then workshops and educational activities to local healthcare professionals, aiming to also build a capacity in a very disconnected and very almost non-functional healthcare system. We also operate two main projects inside Israel. One of them is through our prisoners and detainees department, and through this work we aim to protect the right to health of the incarcerated community. In Israel, this is a big issue, because the health system that is inside the Israeli prisons, the Israeli prisons is operated by a system called the IPS, Israeli prison system. And inside the prison facilities, a different healthcare system operates, that is expressed through different treatment that is offered to prisoners, different kind of doctors, meaning doctors that are not very committed to ethical norms, different medication basket is provided to them, and therefore there is a very big gap of healthcare services that are lacking to prisoners, and this is where we try to fill the gap. We do casework where we have some sort of a hotline where prisoners can call and they inform us of whatever their condition is, and we begin a casework communication with the IPS and with the Ministry of Health to provide and secure the needed treatment. We also have lawyers that go and visit prisoners that we know are beneficiaries of ours. And we also have volunteer physicians who, when needed, go and provide either examination, but that happens after a very long procedure of that sometimes escalates to an appeal to the Israeli courts. I would go on and on the and all the sub projects that are inside this department. One last thing is that inside Israel we also work on protecting the right to health of asylum seekers that have no health insurance and because of that have very limited access to healthcare. So we do it through an open clinic in Yaffa, Tel Aviv, where also we have a group of volunteer physicians who provide treatment to asylum seekers. That is in a nutshell.
Thank you so much for your input. Maybe let's start with the question, who those Palestinians incarcerated in Israeli detention are. here in Switzerland during the swap of Palestinian prisoners with Israeli hostages. We had one instance where our news platform Blick, one of the biggest news platforms in Switzerland, put up a publicity with about 20 faces of Palestinian prisoners freed during that swap, who were declared terrorists. Those pictures were displayed around the whole German-speaking part of Switzerland. Can you say a little bit more about who those people, adults and children, are who are in Israeli detention?
Yes, I think the first batch of freed prisoners were mainly minors under the age of 18. Terrorists are whoever is indicted with a security offense. Security offense is the most common offense to be indicted in the West Bank. And just to give you like a little bit of a context, who are these people who are indicted by insecurity offenses? Kids who throw stones at soldiers in Nabi Saleh, which is a Palestinian village in the West Bank, who suffer from a lot of settler violence and a lot of harassment from the military. So a kid who would throw a stone, he would also be considered a terrorist, because Israel hold thousands of Palestinian minors in detention, a lot of time without fair trial, and a lot of time without a decent representation by a lawyer. And when we speak about, you know, the unfair comparison between the terrorist detainees who were released, so these are basically I assume that a lot of them are also were also detained in an unfair matter, meaning I used to work also as a human rights lawyer, and part of my job was to represent Palestinian detainees in security offenses, and I would only represent minors, and we're talking about tens and even more, like dozens of children get arrested daily in the West Bank, in military raids, in mass arrest arrest campaigns. They are brought to interrogation with police officers who are not trained to interrogate minors. They don't have the same rights as Israeli minors being detained, meaning they can be held more time until they get brought up in front of a judge, and they are not, their parents are not, a lot of time not being informed about where they are held or what is their conditions. A lot of time they are interrogated in Hebrew, even though they don't speak Hebrew, and they sign a Hebrew confession without knowing the language. And so this is a very important context when we're talking about minors in Israeli prisons, because these are the people who are now serving time. I hope that answers.
Maybe you can elaborate a little bit more on that. I read in your latest report that you speak of administrative detention and military law. So how many prisoners are actually in administrative detention, and what does that mean?
I don't know the exact number. I know that it varies around 1,000, between 300 to 1,500.
Minus.
No, no. Administrative detention, not only minors, like in general. Administrative detention is basically a tool that is supposed to be used as a last resort in a ticking bomb conditions, meaning that it's a preventative, not a not as a mean to
punish.
Yeah, it's not a punishment tool, it's a preventative tool. And because of that, it gives the military and the security forces the ability to arrest without bringing the detainee in front of a judge, without presenting evidence, and with a very laconic claim of security reasons, meaning a person from the Shabak, the Israeli security force, would present like a paper to the judge claiming that for security reasons he cannot present the evidence linking the offense to the person, and they would issue an arrest order that can vary between 3, 4, or 6 months, and each time the order expires, they would be brought up to the judge, to court, and without a trial that hears arguments, without being presented any real evidence against the detained person, they would issue a renewed order. This has been officially a tool that is used by the military and the security forces to suppress Palestinians, to threat Palestinians, and it is used because a lot of times the judges and the courts themselves, they cooperate with the efforts of the military. They also mix the intention of the arrest itself from preventative to a punishment arrest, and that way they allow this to not be a last resort, but a lot of time like a first resort. This has been happening also before the 7th of October. There has been a spike in the issuance of administrative detention orders. But what is more visible is the spike in using the illegal combatant law to apply it on detainees from Gaza. This law, what it does is that it it applies a whole other set of rules on the IPS that includes not allowing a lawyer visit, imposing very strict conditions on the prisoners, not allowing any external party to visit the prisoners, and holding for a very long period of time without bringing the prisoners to court. This has been used arbitrarily, meaning whoever is being arrested in Gaza is now considered illegal combatant. This also includes a case of an 83-year-old woman who suffers from Alzheimer's, who was held in a military base for 2 months without informing anyone, without informing their family, without updating the organizations who are asking for information about her, without letting her speak to a lawyer. She was defined as an illegal combatant, and she was driven to the Gazan border 2 months after she was arrested, left there, and no accountability, no explanation for this kind of an action was given.
Maybe I can ask you just regarding that. In your newest report, it's also written that that what is happening since October 7th, you consider this as forced disappearance under international law. Mm-hmm. So this practice has increased a lot. Can you maybe say a little bit about why you consider it forced appearance, disappearance?
Yeah. It's considered forced disappearance because under international law, Israel is obliged to ensure a set of minimal protections on the rights of people they detain during a conflict, and that includes, protection on health, seeing a lawyer, seeing a medical medical professional, not being exposed to torture, a set of rules that are minimal but are very primary in protecting basic human rights of detainees. Since October 7th, Israel has started a brutal wave of mass detentions in Gaza, meaning every time they, as in the army, would enter a neighborhood, a hospital, an area, they would arrest a very high number of people without having any suspects that they're looking for. They would just pick whoever is in front of them. It was also very evident that they were targeting medical professionals, because a lot of medical professionals were healthcare personnels were detained. They would do that and keep them in custody in military bases, without any documentation of the people that are being held, the number of people that are being held, without knowing in which conditions they are being held. The Ministry of Health also participated in this very problematic situation in that it issued an order for the hospitals not to treat Gazan detainees. And so the Israeli, you know, civil hospitals stopped receiving and giving treatments to Gazan detainees, and they opened what is called Sde Teiman. Sde Teiman is now a field hospital right next to a military base that is supposed to give an answer to Gazan detainees that are in need of medical care but cannot be treated in Israeli hospitals. Doctors who work in this Sde Teiman facility claim that the conditions that they see detainees in and the conditions in which they are being treated are very would amount to torture. They are being held in very painful positions for a long period of time, not given medical treatment, are brought to the hospital only after a very long time that they've been in need for medical treatment. So they come in a very bad situation. The medical team themselves have a new regulation imposed on them that basically says doctors who treat Gazan detainees would do it anonymously, meaning their names are not documented anywhere that they given medical treatment to detainees. And that is because the position itself, the situation of them being exposed to such treatment already put them in a criminal place, because they're taking part and they're ensuring this person stays in that situation. So yeah, right now we know about almost 300 persons who were detained since October 7th. We don't know exactly the number of people who already died in the custody of the IPS and the military. We know that some of the people who are detained stay under the custody of the military in military bases. Some would be held in Israeli prisons, and they would be under the custody of the IPS. The IPS is more, let's say, official in their documentation, but the military is a complete black hole. No one knows how many people they hold and who are these people. Since October 7th, there has been also a very grave escalation in the IPS facilities that followed an order from the Israeli Minister of Interior Security, Itamar Ben-Gvir, of The order is basically putting the IPS facilities in what's called lockdown mode. Lockdown mode meaning no lawyer visits, no ex-